The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator. Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, June 9th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here on the Normal Network and enjoying our anchor program, Normal Show Live. And you can always catch Normal Show Live every weekday, 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern time. We also replay at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern, and again at 10 o'clock at night and 1 Eastern. So check us out whenever you can. Fit into your schedule or download our first hour through iTunes or our blog at stash.normal.org. We've got news, we've got interviews, and we've got music for you on today's show. But first, let us introduce our good friend, the pirate, Ganja John.
What's up, Russ? How you doing?
Hey, doing good, man. Good to see you here in the studio.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville.
Have you ever been to Argusville?
What are you smoking there, boy?
I don't know. What are we smoking today?
A little Blackberry Kush.
A Blackberry Kush.
But yes, I am, for those of you listening on the podcast, I am wearing the eye patch today.
There we go.
And the reason why is because I lost my eye last night. You know, we'll find it.
I've had a lot of jobs in my life, and I have never had the opportunity to work with someone who had to say, hey, man, I lost my eye last night.
Yeah.
That's the first time at work I've ever heard that. I got to thank you for that. So John's engineering the show, and also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Carrie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I love Thursdays. It's really a symbol that, you know, the weekend is just around the corner.
Yeah, good Thursday stuff coming up. Although the news today, I was kind of going through the headlines myself, looking at it. I don't know if it's all good. What do we got in the headlines for today?
Well, you know, in the next couple of weeks, a lot of the states are wrapping up their legislative sessions. So there'll probably be breaking news throughout the next couple of weeks of a couple of bills slipping in under the radar, slipping in the last minute. I've got a story about two of those today. Also, we have some breaking news out of Washington State, a Supreme Court ruling. That's probably what you're talking about was negative. But I've got some great news about our favorite celeb stoner. So that's all coming up in the news today.
All right. We'll get to that right after our first break. Also on today for music, we've got our daily toker tunes. We always play them after the 20 after break, and today's Groovin' Thursday music comes from the Earthquake Institute. We're going to get
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
Nope.
What do we
Calling
got?
Calling an audible. We got Chitty Bang with the song Well, you'll hear it.
We'll hear it when we play it. Okay, I'll tell you what. We'll save Earthquake Institute for hour two.
Yes.
We'll play that sometime in hour two for you. Also, today is Cops Say Legalized Drugs Day. We do every second and fourth Thursday, we speak with a member from law enforcement against prohibition. And today, we get Terry Nelson, one of the top guys in LEAP, is going to be joining us to talk about a very terrible anniversary that's taking place next Friday. So he'll join us to talk about that. And then at 45 past, Jennifer Alexander joins us in the Grassroots Activism segment to talk about some news from Oregon and some things going on at the last second in the legislature. They're pretty, pretty slimy for medical marijuana patients. All that and more coming up soon on Normal Show Live.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Been busted? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to
medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The Washington State Supreme Court has ruled that an employee can be fired for using medical marijuana, even if the employee is using it at home and shows no sign of impairment on the job. The decision handed down today from the highest court in the state found that Washington State's medical marijuana law allows no recourse in employment disputes. There was only one dissenting vote from Justice Tom Chambers. The ruling stems from a case involving a woman who sued a company in Bremerton for firing her for failing a drug test. The woman told the company, that just happens to be based in Colorado, that she used marijuana legally in the state with the consent of her doctor for debilitating migraines. The woman who was hired in 2006 was required to take a drug test for her employment and was fired a week later when the test results came back positive for cannabis. She was identified as Jane Roe in court documents, since medical marijuana is still illegal under federal law. Her attorney argued that voters in the state intended broader protection for medical marijuana patients when they voted on the issue back in 1998. The law does say that patients with terminal or debilitating illnesses, quote, shall not be penalized in any manner or denied any right or privilege. He told the justices that voters would be flabbergasted if qualified patients could lose their jobs simply for using medical marijuana at home in accordance with the act. He said his client had suffered no negative side effects on her ability to work. The judges wrote in their ruling that the Medical Use of Marijuana Act in the state did not provide for a private cause of action for being fired, saying the law does not create a clear public policy to support a claim for wrongful discharge in violation of an employer policy. Judge Chambers disagreed, saying that the law's intention was to treat marijuana like other medications. He wrote, quote, Roe seems to be exactly the sort of person the people intended to protect. She suffered from debilitating migraine headaches that resisted treatment. A doctor advised her that the potential benefits of marijuana likely outweighed the health risks. Her migraines subsided enough that she could seek and find a job, unquote. Judge Chambers also urged the legislature to review and improve the law, saying that this case, along with many others, show the act is in need of legislative review. Well, the legislature did just that this spring, but most of the protections in the bill were vetoed out by Governor Chris Gregoire.
Wow, this story kind of, you know, hits me, but it does kind of, you know, solidify the entire West Coast as a no medical marijuana patients need apply zone, right? Forget about having any sort of right to work. Your choice is medicine that works for you or a job. you don't get both, because we have the right to discriminate against you here in Oregon, thanks to the Emerald Steel case, in California, thanks to Ross v. Raging Wire, and now in Washington State, thanks to this case here with Teletech Customer Care Management, where I'm sure, what, she was probably answering phones in a cubicle, you know, for customer support or something like that, maybe selling something over the phone. For God's sake, we can't have a medical marijuana patient there working where there could be, you know, she could drop the phone on someone's foot or something, the danger that she must have posed. This hits me pretty hard, too, because my wife is a patient just for that, for migraines. Literally, you know, I've taken her to the emergency room numerous times with migraines so severe that, you know, it felt like death, you know. And it did severely impact her work. I mean, she ended up using up all her vacation days and sick days because of this, and we never got to go on vacations or anything because of this debilitating illness. And we moved to Oregon. She's a medical marijuana patient. Unfortunately, she's running her own business here, but this would be the same kind of discrimination she would face. It harkens back to a sadder time in American history when there was discrimination against the Irish, you know, the No Irish Need Apply signs held in the storefront windows. It's disgusting and it's wrong and it's not what America is about. And it shows why medical marijuana, once again, does not go far enough. Now, in the Oregon law, our Oregon law says medical marijuana shall be treated like other medicines, but it's not. You know, you're not drug tested for Viagra or Vicodin or Valium when you're going to apply for some job. So it's not treated like other medicines. This Washington law says it shall not be penalized in any manner or denied any right or privilege. But obviously she's being denied the right to work. Now, the opponents would argue, well, no, it's, you don't have the right to work. It's our choice whether we fire you, and you can't force us to hire these people. We have a right to discriminate. And apparently, the courts on the West Coast agree. We need to continue to fight for full legalization so marijuana can take its place with other medicines, and we can be free from this sort of discrimination.
In Connecticut, things are moving in a positive way when it comes to cannabis law reform. We told you recently that Connecticut had passed a decriminalization measure, the 14th state to do so, and today the Connecticut House of Representatives approved a last-minute bill that may save the idea of legalizing medical marijuana in the state. Today was the last day of the legislative session for Connecticut lawmakers, and early this morning, the House amended a bill to create a task force to study the issue of medical marijuana in Connecticut. Republican Representative Penny Bacciacci said that even though she felt there were enough votes this year to approve a medical marijuana bill, she said there just wasn't enough time this session to have the lengthy debate that is expected on the issue in the Senate. If the task force creation bill passes the Senate today in a vote, they can look at the issues such as cultivation, dispensaries, and program requirements, and then bring that information to the table next year. As of showtime, the Senate has yet to vote on this last-minute bill.
Yeah, all right. We need to put together a task force to study medical marijuana and how it might work in a state like Connecticut, because medical marijuana is a completely brand new thing that no state has ever done before. There's nothing we could learn from, 16 other states in the United States that currently have medical marijuana programs, some dating back over a decade. We need a task force to study it. And you say you think you've got enough votes to actually pass medical marijuana, but we wouldn't have the time to debate it. If you're confident you can pass it, what need for debate is there? I do not understand this slow motion, lockdown in these legislatures. What are they afraid of at this point? It's working in all these other states, and 70 to 80% of the people in your state support it. What is the fear here? I mean, I suppose I shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm glad they've got this thing at the last minute to at least save something for medical marijuana. But come on, Connecticut, we can do better.
And a budget in Oregon that was passed through by the Joint Ways and Means Committee on Wednesday night will double the fees for registering with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. Currently, patients that have a recommendation from a doctor that marijuana may be therapeutic has to register with the Department of Health and Human Services and pay $100. There is a program for those on state assistance to pay a reduced fee of $20. In the new fee schedule, a charge of $200 was included in one of several bills that passed quickly through the chamber. Republican lawmaker Doug Wislett of Klamath Falls says that there is a lack of scrutiny over the bills, saying that it is unacceptable to push this kind of information through without time to study it. Others had more harsh words for the last-minute budget item. Bob Wolf, the director of the Oregon Marijuana Policy Initiative, described the fee increase as a de facto tax. He said that medical marijuana patients are ill, sometimes disabled, and often poor. He says the budget item is a tax on vulnerable people and called the legislators who passed the measure so quickly without input scurrilous for taking on such a disgusting maneuver. The Oregon Marijuana Policy Initiative is a coalition of the 12 largest patient organizations in the state, including Oregon Green Free and Oregon Normal. The group had released the news about the death of the last remaining medical marijuana bill, House Bill 3664, a restrictive bill that would have put the Oregon medical marijuana program in jeopardy, and had believed that attacks on the program were concluded for the current legislative session that ends in the next 2 weeks. The increased fees for the OMMP patients are expected to contribute about $7 million over the biennium and will go towards a program for drinking water and emergency medical services. The Oregonian points out that conspicuously absent on Wednesday's furious budget session was the public safety budget that includes money to run state prisons. With lower income patients being cut off from the program due to higher fees, they might need that prison money to house the patients that can not afford to renew their cards since they will now be considered criminals.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I don't want to go too much into this because our guest Jennifer Alexander here at 45 Pass has a lot to say about this. But I just want to point out that the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, you know, has these people registering $100 every year. We call it protection money, right? It's the protection money you pay the state so that the cops don't come and haul you away in cuffs for growing and using a plant. So you pay this protection money of $100, and the justification of it, of course, is, well, you know, we need this money so that the program can be self-sustaining and we don't take any taxpayer burden, et cetera, et cetera. And we agreed to that. Okay, we can kind of understand that. And $20 for low-income folks, that's a good workaround as well. And this program, since then, has been completely self-sustained. In fact, it has run a surplus, so much so that in 2005, back when there was only about 11,000 patients, mind you, back in 2005, the Oregon state legislature passed a bill that took $929,000 worth of that Oregon medical marijuana program protection money and moved it to other budgets that were hurting because, you know, Oregon doesn't have a sales tax and so forth. So they've already taken the money. Now they've realized they can come and take more. And this also has the intended consequence of reducing the patient rolls. Oh, that abuse they keep talking about. Too many patients. Well, jack up the fees by double, and people that have to pay $100 every year and have to pay $200 every year, they'll just say, screw it, I'll just go back to the black market and take my chances. We're going to talk more about this toward the end of the show in our fourth segment here. I'm going to end there because I'm going to leave the rest for Jennifer.
And I just wanted to add an update for the Willie Nelson fans, which I guess is all of us. Willie, who was arrested for marijuana possession in November, took a plea deal yesterday to avoid jail time. His tour bus was stopped at a checkpoint when officers found a few ounces of marijuana, although there have been different amounts reported from the time of his arrest up to the time it came before the judge, who is known to be a fan. Nelson pleaded no contest to the misdemeanor charge of possession of drug paraphernalia, so the amount of marijuana was not an issue in sentencing. Prosecutors in the case agreed to the reduced charges for the 78-year-old entertainer, and he was fined $500 and an additional $280 in court costs. If Willie Nelson can stay out of trouble for the next 30 days, the case will be dismissed entirely. The county prosecutor, C.R. Bramblett, also a reported fan, said that now all Nelson must do is sign the paper and send in the check for the money. Although Bramblett was the source of reports that Willie would be let off the hook if he came to court and serenaded the judge, he said he was only joking. Well, it looks like Willie Nelson didn't have to do anything to be let off the hook.
Okay, so this is the story of how getting caught with 5 ounces of weed turns into getting caught with 2 ounces of weed turns into getting caught with a pipe. That's just amazing. And you know, good for Willie. Again, glad he's, you know, only having to pay a fine and have to, you know, keep his nose clean for 30 days. But that's not what happens to the rest of us in Texas if we're caught with that much marijuana. Over 4 ounces of possession, from 4 ounces to 1 pound of possession in Texas is a state jail felony carrying 180 days to 2 years incarceration and a $10,000 fine. Now, if you're caught with no prior felony convictions in Texas, you can get a lighter sentence here. If convicted of less than a pound, the judge can impose a sentence of probation with mandatory drug treatment, you know, drug testing and all of that. If no treatment center exists within your jurisdiction, the judge may waive the treatment requirement. The judge can also waive all fines. So that is why Willie Nelson's 5 ounces turned into 2 ounces. Now, 2 ounces or less, 2 to 4 ounces would be a misdemeanor with a year and $4,000. 2 ounces or less could be a B misdemeanor, 180 days and 2 ounces. But paraphernalia possession, Class C misdemeanor, no incarceration, $500 fine. So that's exactly why that happened. Nobody wanted to put Willie Nelson behind a jail cell. And I just have to ask, if it's good enough for Willie Nelson, why is it not good enough for the rest of us?
What do you think about a pirate break?
Arr, time for a pirate break. Let's get to that. It'll be a good time here.
You know why we pirates love the normal show? Because it's always smoking.
We have to take
maybe
a short break. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The world's greatest cannabis competition is coming back to the Bay Area. Over 100 strains of medical marijuana will go head-to-head to see who's the dankest in California. Indicas, sativas, hybrids, concentrates, edibles, plus THC, CBD, and CBN testing. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, June 25th and 26th at the Concourse Exhibition Center in San Francisco. It's gonna be awesome! Get your tickets at MedCanCup.com.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at HighTimes.com and finer bookstores.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, we are going to turn things over to Ganja John for this one, who brings us their Daily Toker Tune for Groovin' Thursday. What's up?
We got Chitty Bang in the rotation. Chitty Bang is an American hip-hop group from Philadelphia. It consists of Chitty, the MC, and the DJ Zafoon Jones. They met in 2008 at Drexel University, and they've been doing some stuff with indie rock samples, stuff like that, and I really dig it because it's different than anything else I've ever heard. But without further ado, here's Chitty Bang.
All right, Chitty Bang here, and what was the song?
Nothing on We.
Nothing on We. Chitty Bang for you on Almost Live.
Look what we have here. Hero. And everything ain't what it seems. And this is for the people that's chasing their dreams.
Wow.
Get your money hustled up. So get your money hustled up. But don't let them take it. Rules, we break it. Trying to get it cause we overachieve. Mama, I made it. Now they hate it. But you can trust they got nothing on we. And
And everybody needs a hero, just another number, they'd rather you be a zero. But you can make it out, be patient with no surgery. Somebody call 911, it's an emergency, the kids need a hero. Let us get bread, they follow everything they see and it embedded in their head. Custodian, clean your banks, bring Cody in. And I know that you probably into that Nickelodeon. They gon' watch it on that TV screen. And when you sleep, remember it and retrieve these dreams. We live and time froze, now we beat those teams victorious. And can we bring this to the chorus? And sure he is a boy meeting world like Corey is. And everything ain't what it seems. And this is for the people that's chasing their dreams. Get your money, hustle up. So could you get your money, hustle up? But don't let them take it. Rules, we break it. Trying to get it cause we overachieve. Mama, I made it. Now they hate it. But you can trust they got nothing on me.
They got nothing on me. And you could tell it got nothing on me. And you could tell it got nothing on me. You could tell it got nothing on me. You could tell it got nothing on me. And you could tell it got nothing on me.
And if you dream it, you could grab it. When obstacles arrive, you drive past it. I learned it's more to life when we had a smash hit. And the only thing guaranteed in life is a casket. That's why I live it up. They try to rob me of my dreams and told me give it up. I said I refuse. This journey I pursue. And what I do to haters, I made them my own muse. Kind of funny, I'm amused. They say your mind is the most powerful thing to use. But I hope it's as powerful as the Pope is. Beamer, Benz, and Bentley like Ford, I got focus. Yeah, see, you can do it if you follow it. Look into the stars, they're shooting with no hollow tips. And it isn't what it seems. So just like Yeezy, we steady getting out our dreams. That's good.
And everything ain't what it seems. And this is for the people that's chasing their dreams. Get your money, hustle up. So could you get your money, hustle up? But don't let them take it. Rules, we break it. Trying to get it cause we overachieve. Mama, I made it. Now they hate it. But you can trust they got nothing on me.
They got nothing on me. And you could tell it got nothing on me. And you could tell it got nothing on me. You could tell it got nothing on me. You could tell it got nothing on me. And you could tell it got nothing on me.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Hi, it's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Going to light.
Roll a big fatty.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
Said, hey, do you have it going, kids? Sure would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it.
One of the most disturbing elements of the war on marijuana is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows firsthand the futility of the drug war and reaches out to the community and to current law enforcement to end our war on drugs through legalization. It's time now to speak to one such officer in our continuing look at law enforcement against prohibition.
All right, we're glad to have our next guest back on the show. Terry Nelson from LEAP is joining us. Terry, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Russ.
Oh, you've got a quite the career in law enforcement. To remind our listeners that may have not heard your first interview with us, Customs and Border Protection, Aviation Marine Group Supervisor, Department of Homeland Security. You've done it all. You've worked everywhere, and you're saying we ought to legalize drugs. We're glad we got you on our side.
Well, I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk a little bit about it. When you first say legalization, everybody runs backwards. So we try to start the conversation with regulation and control. Mm-hmm. And, of course, to regulate and control anything, it has to be legal.
Right.
And as I'm sure you're aware, Leaf's position is we want to take the criminal gangs and the cartels out of the matrix and stop the killing and the violence and deal with it as an education problem and a treatment issue.
Yeah, it seems to me it's a rational acceptance of the fact that as long as there's been humans, there have been drugs and people that take them, and you want to work to reduce the harm of that, acknowledge that it exists, which is not to say that you approve of it or condone of it, but that it exists and it needs to be treated like a health issue.
Exactly. I mean, it's been around since time began, and we're making zero progress. Next week would be 40 years of Nixon's war on drugs, and nothing, no progress has been made. So we need to change our strategy. Instead of harming people, we need to try to help them. And because, quite frankly, you know, if a person gets a drug arrest, he basically ruined his life because now he can't get a decent job, doesn't pay the taxes he would have ended up paying. So it's a negative all the way around for the government. The government really needs to change its strategy and deal with this as a harm reduction issue instead of a criminal issue.
Yeah, and you mentioned the goals and the results of the war on drug declared June 17th, 1971, when President Richard Nixon called drugs public enemy number one. And I understand Leap's got an event coming up to commemorate that, so to speak.
Yes, on Tuesday we'll be at the National Press Club in D.C. holding a press conference. That'll be the 40th year anniversary, and we think it's a good time to call attention to 40 years of failure of a public policy.
Mm-hmm. And as far as this, who else will be at this press conference is representing LEAP, and will there be other groups involved?
I'll be there, our executive director, of course, will be there. And a couple of other of our directors, I haven't seen the full list yet.
Okay.
Because I think it's still kind of working its way out. And we still have a day, you know, no need to get in a hurry.
Good point. So the 40-year anniversary of the war on drugs, even, you know, the Associated Press, in an article that came out a couple months ago, I think it was, noted that there was $1 trillion spent. And what other damage do you see from this 40 years that maybe other mainstream publications aren't expressing that needs to be told?
Well, I personally think we ought to draw more attention to the environmental damage caused by the illegal activities. Like down in Colombia with the cocaine and stuff, you're dumping hydrochloric acid and everything into the Amazon rainforest, and then you're spraying herbicide over the plants, which is not working, by the way. We spent $5.2 billion spraying the coca plant, and production was up 27% after that all happened. Of course, here in our own country, the national forests and parks and stuff where the cartels are growing their cannabis grows, and since the gorilla grows, they're using all sorts of chemicals and stuff, and they're tearing up the forest, cutting down trees to build stuff, and then, you know, protecting their property, so to speak. Of course, it's not theirs, it's our property. But prohibition doesn't work. It just flat doesn't work. No matter what you do, you just squeeze the balloon, it'll pop up someplace else. I mean, I read an article today that the drug czar is claiming great success. Well, not the drug czar, my bad. The general that's in charge of Southcom is claiming at Southern Command, which works in Colombia, that they've really cut back on the production of coca in Colombia. What he neglects to mention is the fact that it's picked up in Peru and in Bolivia. So no matter, you know, you have incremental successes one place in the world, it's just going to crop up someplace else. And of course, Russ, quite frankly, even if we do eradicated in Colombia and South America. It grows in, it'll grow in Africa. It'll grow in sub-Saharan Africa. It'll grow over in India. You're not going to stop it that way.
Yeah. And I'm glad you bring that up, because we, being normal national organization, we're often very, you know, focused on America. But this war on drugs that largely championed by the United States has now reached and entangled into so many international areas with all the UN single convention treaties and so forth. How does the United States move forward with the goal of LEAP here, legalizing drugs, regulating them, controlling them? How do they move forward when we've got so many of these international entanglements that we have to live up to?
Well, but we created those international entanglements. We pushed those three treaties that really control the drugs in the world today. But you know, I'm sure you're well aware of the recent Global Commission on Drugs just came out and said, "Hey, it's not working. It's a total failure." I just read today that the gentle lady from Missouri is calling on a review of the success in South America. The private contractors and the billions of dollars that we're spending down there, there's just no tangible results for it. And now, ironically, if you're even successful at creating a shortage of cocaine, it'll just drive the price up and make it more violent and make it more more viable for the drug cartels to protect their turf and kill more people. And you mentioned earlier, yet we have almost 40,000 people have been killed in Mexico in the last 3 to 4 years in this drug war, and we're not even counting Central America. Since Mexico has tightened up some and the killing is going there, now the cartels are moving back into Central America and creating the crime and violence down there. It's a hamster wheel that we really have to get off of. And once again, it's not just the Western Hemisphere. A leader of a Western African nation was assassinated a while back for busting a load of cocaine. It's all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you bring up Mexico. I often refer to it in my presentations is yet another thing that we've outsourced in America. We've outsourced the violence of our drug markets in large extent to Mexico and Central America. I'm glad you brought that up. And I'm curious because as we bring up drug regulation, drug legalization, the first one that people think of is cannabis, marijuana. And when this was brought up with Prop 19, the Rand Corporation came back and said, well, marijuana's not that much of their business and it wouldn't affect them that much, and well, they're not going to become Boy Scouts, they're going to continue to sell other drugs, and now they'll just move to harder drugs. What's your feelings on that, since you did work with Border Patrol, Customs? You probably have some good thoughts on this, I'd imagine.
Well, I don't think it's a true statement. I'm so sick of hearing people say it's a gateway drug. If it's a gateway drug, we've had 114 million people in America admit to having used cannabis. If it's a gateway drug, then we'd have somewhere around 100 million cocaine and heroin users in America, and we don't have that.
Right.
We may have a million, million five, something like that. We don't really know how many because it's all underground, but it's still not the size of our drug problem. While it is a problem for those it affects, it's a terrible thing, you know, to get an addiction and not be able to get rid of it. It's such a small portion for the amount of harm that the prohibition causes. What, 1.8 million people arrested last year for non-violent drug offenses. You just destroyed 1.8 million people's lives. In the last 10 years, it's something like 14 million people have received felony sentences for non-violent drug offenses. These people now are disenfranchised, can't vote in some states, you know, can't get decent jobs, can't get college loans in some places, can't get a license, like to be a licensed plumber or electrician. You can't get a license if you have a you can't get bonded. You can get a license, but you can't get bonded, so you can't go in someone's home if you have a criminal record. It just has so many consequences that people don't think about when they first make these dumb laws.
Yeah, and that's it. The arrest is hardly the biggest problem that you deal with. It's all the consequences after arrest. And now in the age of the internet, it's even amplified. When I was growing up, 80s and such, your record was kind of local. You know, you might have been able to move somewhere, but not now. I mean, we're all connected, all database searches, and just a few mouse clicks away from knowing every single little misdemeanor conviction you've ever had, no matter where you're at in the United States or, you know, anywhere.
And anymore, you don't even have to be a police officer to get that information. All you have to do is pay the money to one of those security firms, and they'll provide the information to you. So there is no privacy in that respect. Mm-hmm. But Another consequence, I think, would be a very positive consequence, which Richard Lee there in Hoekstraden was recently talking about. You know, I was in Oakland. I was there in 1968 during the riots. And that part of town was a pretty tough part of town. And, you know, now where Hoekstraden, that's several blocks downtown, is vital again. That there's people on the streets at night. You feel safe. And this wouldn't just happen in Oakland. Damn. I mean, it could happen in Dallas and Houston and New York and Chicago, all these parts of the cities that you can't go now because they're controlled by the cartels and the drug gangs. You could once again walk the streets there safely with your family. Just people don't think about the far-reaching consequences. We could actually move back into the city, save fuel, save resources that are valuable, and revitalize these blighted areas that were, you know, that suffered from 40 years of the drug war.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Terry Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. I encourage everyone to check out the website at leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. And Terry, you know, there's a song that we play quite often on this network. It's a song by George Clinton called the U.S. Customs Coast Guard Dope Dog. And one of the lines in it says, there's more profit in pretending we're stopping it than in selling it. What do you think about that as far as there being intentional profit in keeping drugs illegal and the entities that might be involved in that?
Well, let's see. $600 and some odd million paid to politicians by the pharmaceutical companies. The money that the brewers gave to fight cannabis legalization in Prop 19, the $5 million a year drug testing kit business that we have in America, Sikorsky selling helicopters to Central and South America. Yeah, I think there's a business involved here that they don't want to stop it. And you know, it's a $500 billion a year business, but it's built on the misery of people that are least able to fight back.
Yeah, it's so sad. And especially as we look at, you know, I think it was Michelle Williams, I think her name was, who wrote the book The New Jim Crow, and how the war on drugs is so racially disproportionate, and it seems to be just another way of controlling a class of people that have long been underserved and discriminated against in our country. How do you see ending the war on drugs as changing that dynamic?
Well, see, having lived most of my life in the South and the Southwest specifically, and that's where I've done most of my work, Florida and of course, the Southern Guides and Central and South America and Puerto Rico, I have seen this played out more with Latinos and, sure, and Hispanics than with the so the Jim Crow thing, the only reason I have the issue with those kind of things, I don't want to make a race issue of something that is affects every one of us equally. Now, I don't mean we don't go to jail equally, but it affects us all because it's destroying our country, it's destroying our nation, it's destroying our future. And when you ruin these kids' lives, the reason these kids are committing these crimes and getting picked up and arrested is because it pays more than flipping burgers. There's not the economy is not there to support these people. Of course, once they get a record, they can't get a job, so really all they can do is flip burgers or deal. So it's just, we need to look at it overall encompassing, and it mostly affects the poor because the rich people, they just deliver it to their office buildings, they get it, or they can afford a good lawyer and they don't go to jail. Mm-hmm. So the people that can least protect themselves are the ones I'm concerned more about. It. Let's help the kids make a few mistakes. Let's let them grow up and be the citizens that they can be and successful as they can be, and not put a monkey on their back that just rides them, you know, until they fall down.
And you mentioned that economic impact, you know, that they can't get the job, you know, the burger flipping job, it pays too little or isn't there or isn't available to them, so they turn to dealing on the small time level there. So do you think do you think from legalization of drugs that it will generate enough jobs to make up for the underground jobs that will be lost when the price crashes and it's legalized and regulated?
I think so. But look, this is an artificial economy. If you go to Laredo, Texas, you go to Miami, you go to many of these border cities, these buildings were built by drug money. You go down into Mexico to these shopping malls that rival anything we have in America. They're built with drug money. So, I mean, it does do some good in the course of things, but it's a false economy. Mm-hmm. And it can't sustain itself. It's kind of like having oil but running out one day. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's going to run out. I mean, because our economy cannot sustain the drug war, the $70-80 billion a year we're pouring down the tube, and that's just incidental cost. But the government's own numbers, they think that the cost of society of drug abuse is about $180 billion, the total overall cost. That's some serious change, you know. And we think about $107 billion of that's associated with drug-related crime. Mm-hmm. So, and it would only cost about $15 billion a year to treat all these people. So economically speaking, it's a better deal to treat it as harm reduction and criminalization of it.
Yeah, it reminds me of someone telling me the hypothesis he had come up with. I can't remember what I heard it. Maybe it was on one of our podcasts, but it was that compared to what we're spending to be in, say, Afghanistan, we could actually purchase all of the cannabis and opium grown in Afghanistan rather than – it's just amazing figures he was coming up with, but I won't go into that. We've got a round – go ahead, Terry.
No, I was just going to say, you mentioned Afghanistan. They're producing twice the amount of opium poppies that they need to meet the world market. So the Taliban's actually stockpiling it, keeping it off the market, trying to drive the price up. The United States government is out there trying to destroy the fields, which will drive the price up, which will result in an increased profit for the Taliban. They'll use the money to kill us. Hello?
Hello. No kidding. Any minute now, the Taliban will be like the U.S. government, paying farmers not to grow.
Well, basically, that's what they're doing. They're keeping it off the market so they're stockpiling it to drive the price up.
That's amazing. Well, we could go on, but I've got to round this segment up. So, Terry Nelson from Leap, before we let you go, remind folks about the press conference, and will this be available on the media anywhere for people to watch?
You know, I can't answer that question. I'm sorry, I can't. But the last time we were up 2 years ago when we did the one celebrating the 75th for Prohibition, mm-hmm. We had very good news coverage. And all the major networks carried us there in D.C. And, of course, in turn, their satellites carried us. So I'm anticipating some very good coverage out of it. Of course, we're going to walk down to the drug czar's office and try to present him with our report. We'll see if he'll accept it or not. Would you like to take odds on that?
I'm not usually a betting man, but this time I will. I'll vote on the no side here. Terry, thanks so much for joining us here from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Websites leap.cc or copsaylegalizeddrugs.com, and hope to talk to you again sometime, sir.
All right, stay safe, Ruff.
All right, thank you so much. When we come back, Jennifer Alexander and our grassroots activism, you'll want to stay tuned for this. It's Normal Show Live.
Five of the last seven people to run for president and the last three winners have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House. Show Live reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Cause the day was hard and your work was long and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that weed.
Normal, unlike any other marijuana or drug reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we're pro-marijuana. Every week, we take some time to talk to the citizens of local Normal chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition in this segment we call Grassroots Activism.
All right, welcome back, folks. We are joined live in studio by Jennifer Alexander. She is the campaign director behind the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act 2012, and she's been a guest on the show before, so welcome back, Jennifer.
Thank you.
All right, we'll get your mic dialed in here real quick. And, of course, the news today that we're going to be getting into has to do with the Oregon legislature, which only has, what is it, like a week left? Or
I think two. It's not very long, yeah.
Yeah, they don't have very long left in their session. And so all this legislative session, there's been this battle with the legislature and business trying to ram through all of these terrible negative bills to restrict medical marijuana. And they've been unsuccessful. We've played good defense. We've kind of shot down a lot of the bills, and they all got rolled up into one bill. And we showed your testimony on that on the show. And that bill, I understand, is
dead.
But tell them what's up right now.
Well, we just got word that that bill was dead, and we all started to, you know, relax, thinking that the legislative session was over as far as medical marijuana was concerned. And late last night, Bob Wolf, OMPI director, which is the coalition of the different groups all throughout Oregon, sent me a text and asked if I had seen his email, and I had not. And when I looked, I learned that they had passed out of the Joint Ways and Means Committee a 100% increase on OMMP patient fees. So instead of paying $100 a year, the patients will now have to pay $200. As of last night, it had just passed out of committee into the chamber floors. Since this afternoon, I have heard that it's now sitting on the governor's desk.
Yeah, okay. So in a last-second move, they slipped it into a big old budget bill that nobody's looking at, nobody's really scrutinizing very much, and now people who have been paying $100 a year for their protection money for medical marijuana, now they got to pay $200 a year.
Yes, and we have no idea how this is going to impact the low income, which if you're on low income qualifications, it only costs $20 to get your Oregon medical marijuana card. I could not find any verification on if that also is going up or how much or anything like that. But a lot of patients are concerned because if they can't get this protection with the Oregon medical marijuana card, they're suddenly a felon. It's
right.
Not, there's no gray area. You're either protected or you're a criminal.
Right. And in Oregon, a lot of people don't understand because they think of Oregon as, you know, hippy dippy, love and green and medical marijuana wonderland and decrim and everything. And it's true. We are decriminalized. But in Oregon, you go from under an ounce is a ticket. Over an ounce is a felony. There's no misdemeanor level in Oregon for marijuana possession. Over an ounce, felony. So you're absolutely right. We got 39,774 patients right now. I think 48,000 will be as of July 1st or so on. And if you just make this too expensive and you put too many roadblocks in these people's way, they'll just say, screw it.
Right. And then the other thing that's concerning is that this money isn't even going to the OMMP. This isn't money to help fund the program. It isn't to, you know, hire more people to speed up processing of applications, which they're like 5 months behind.
Yeah.
Instead, this money will be going to a safe drinking water program and emergency medical treatment. So they're charging the sickest people in Oregon to cover the health of
to be able
other
to balance
people.
Their budgets.
Right.
Because they're afraid of raising the taxes on somebody who's got money to oppose them or to run an attack at or something.
Right.
I know, let's raise the money on the medical marijuana people. They ain't got no money. They're not going to raise any attack ad money. They're not going to cause me any problems in the legislature.
And they're expecting that this increase is going to raise about $7 million over the biennium 2 years. So it's not even that dramatic when you're looking at our budget. The Oregon, the Department of Health Human Services, their budget is $7.9 billion. And this increase is only going to raise $7 million. So it's like a drop in the bucket. It's not even that big of a difference to the budget. And yet it's going to hurt us. It's going to hurt
big,
the patients.
Yeah, there we go. And it's the intended consequence here of we couldn't reduce the patient rolls by legislation. So we'll do it by economics.
Yes.
We will cut down a lot of those people that would, you know, they'd barely scrape up the $100. We'll double it to $200. They'll drop off the rolls. They'll become criminals again. We can arrest them again. The cops are happy. The people that are screaming abuse are happy that the patient rolls go down. Everybody's happy but the patients.
Well, and then the other thing that just seems obvious to me, but maybe not so much to them. If you've put a bunch of money into your patient garden, I mean, people spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars getting ready to grow. not being able to pay $200 is not going to make you stop growing marijuana. So mm-hmm. they are going to be felonies. I mean, this is not, it's not like they're just going to be like, oh, never mind, I'll go back to pharmaceuticals. Right. They're still going to use their medicine. They're just going to be criminals now for it. And so then the other interesting thing that Oregon Live had posted on, which is where I found the original source, it said conspicuously absent Wednesday was the public safety budget, which includes money to run state prisons. Lawmakers are still struggling for ways to stem the escalating cost of incarceration. So while we we've raised 7 million from the sick patients, now we're all going to lock them up and we don't know how we're going to pay for it.
Yeah, we don't know how to pay for locking them up.
Now, I've heard that it is on the governor's desk, and I think I would like to encourage people to call the governor's citizens rep message line, and that number is 503-378-4582. That's John Kitzhaber, governor of Oregon.
503-378-4582.
And it's, from last I heard, it's on his desk now. And I don't know that anything can change at this point, but I think we should at least make it known that we are furious with this sneaky attack on patients.
Yeah, there's no excuse for it. And again, it's just, you know, and plus for the money to be going to the clean drinking water and the, what was it, the health?
Emergency medical services.
That's the other way that they make this stick it to you. Cause how are you supposed to oppose that? You don't oppose orphans and puppies, do you? What a terrible person that you'd want to hold back money from clean drinking water and the health services.
And that's so evident because the vote was 22-3.
Yeah.
I would just like to say, you know, if this does pass, it's going to cost my family $600 a year.
Yeah,
to get cards.
Yeah, an extra $600, or no, an extra $300, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can't afford that.
Yeah,
I really can't.
Well,
I'm just going to have to become an outlaw.
Exactly.
I think you made an interesting point too. Is, you know, I jokingly refer to it as protection money, and then say how. At least you could justify having a fee for a registry program because, well, you got to pay people to maintain the registry and you don't want to have a tax, but you can make it, you know, taxpayer neutral so that the program pays for itself. It does. It runs a surplus almost every year. So what is this extra $100 buying the patients? What the hell was the first $100 buying the patients?
Well, and on that note, like I said, they're 5 months behind in processing applications last I heard. They may have improved that slightly, but only slightly. And that's through technological improvements in the system. Still, that means that, you know, for 4 or 5 months, there's patients running around without that card, mm-hmm. without actually being in that system. They have to manually verify it. So if for half of every year, I'm not actually registered, then what is the benefit of that? And if we needed more money, couldn't we be putting it into that program to improve the program? But no, they're charging us for other programs.
Yeah, and the maddening thing also about this is in 2005, when they took the $929,000, that was kind of the state saying, yes, we can make money off of marijuana. But for some reason, they cannot apply that concept. If you're short on funds and you think you can raise $7 million in a biennium applying a $100 a year registration tax to 48,000 people, imagine what you could make off of 396,000 people.
Right. And so on that note, we've been working on the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, trying to legalize marijuana. And I come across people so often that say, you know, we're already legal. We're already legal. And I think that recent events all around between the attacks at the legislature, the letters being issued to the
right.
dispensaries locally, this increase, it makes it clear that there is an attempt to unlegalize us or to at least protect it or minimize it, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really encouraging people, get involved. Let's legalize it. Let's quit fighting this legislative fight with the patients. You know, I don't have $200 to bribe the government not to arrest me, and I don't think most other patients do either. I'm kind of tired of that game, you know.
And the registry exists so that we can make sure to keep separate the people who are healthy enough to lock up and the people who are too sick to lock up. If you stop locking up the healthy people, there's no need to register anybody. There's no need for these restrictions. No need for, you know, it could be a uniform law for everyone to use cannabis for whatever need you have for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, patients, I'm talking to you here in this respect. In 1998, all of the legalizers, all of the people that are healthy enough to lock up, we got behind Measure 67 and voted for it. It's time now to repay the favor. It's time now for patients to understand, you stick with medical marijuana, this is what happens every biennium at the legislature, every session. It's ever since I've been in this state in 2005, every year it's attack, 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 and just struggling to hold the ground that we've maintained, and it's eroding away. This is the road that's going to continue because law enforcement still has the mandate to lock people up for marijuana, and they need to keep pushing the pressure on it to continue to do that. We've got to fight for legalization.
And it's important to know that as of this last election year, we're going to be doing this every year now because Oregon has annual legislative gatherings. And I think I didn't get involved in the legislative process until now, and I don't think a lot of people realize how big of a fight this really is.
Yeah, so check out CannabisTaxAct.org, OCTA2012. .org. Either one, you can learn about Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, because we have got to just legalize. This is going to continue to happen every year at the legislature now. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. We have got to make this legal for everyone. Hey, we're going to continue this discussion in hour two for those of you listening live, for those of you listening on the podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with a live remote broadcast from the Portland City Hall and a very, very interesting press conference we'll be bringing you, and more on that when we talk to you tomorrow, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in hour two as well. So, podcast listeners, thanks for joining us. For Cannabis Carry, Ganja John, Calico the intern, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
We love it. We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.